It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Today I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about climate action in regards to our farming industry, the reduction of the police budget, and the mining industry's role in stewardship land.
Last week we talked about how climate action factors into the latest budget, and I just wanted to return to this topic to explore things in a bit more detail with you. In particular, a big aspect of New Zealand's climate strategy is going to be linked with our farming industry. We all know that in order to reduce our emissions, we are going to need sweeping changes in this regard. What are your thoughts on that?
The main thrust of what we're doing as a government is putting in place a system for farmers to use on every farm in the country where they will be able to measure and manage their emissions, and those emissions will also be priced as they are with industrial emissions through the emissions trading scheme. So where we're going to end up is essentially with two emissions pricing schemes, one for carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide. That's the emissions trading scheme that's been in place for about 12 years now. And then essentially an agricultural emissions scheme that runs alongside it.
Dairy and cattle are a massive part of our economy, and there are significant economic questions that we'll have to answer soon. What is being done to reduce our economic reliance on carbon and methane-intensive farming?
Well, okay, so there's probably a couple of things there. First of all, there are significant changes going on within the dairy and beef and sheep and beef sectors themselves, which improve the emissions output, or so reduce the emissions output of the sector. Now, the evidence for that is that over the course of the last kind of 10, 20 years or so, per unit of output, so for example, per kilo of milk solids or per leg of lamb, the amount of emissions for each unit has actually reduced quite substantially. But the problem that we've had as a country is that, of course, the increase in volume in the overall output has offset the efficiency improvements or the productivity improvements. So what we need to do next is basically convert those efficiency gains into a steady decline in the total output. And I think that that's entirely possible with what's going, what I can see going on. The other thing, that you're asking about is like decreasing our reliance on the sector overall. That's just good economic management, is to make sure that you've got a diversified economy and that you're not overly reliant on a handful of industries. And frankly, in New Zealand, we have been heavily reliant on agriculture and tourism. And of course, tourism's taken an absolute bath from COVID-19. But what we've started to see in response to that is a lot of small businesses are now selling goods overseas through the internet. I think there's a sort of an opportunity here to kind of retask our economy a wee bit with some of the pressure that's come on as a result of COVID.
How do we incentivize farmers to shift away from things like meat and dairy and instead emphasize fruit and veggies?
Well, like I said, that farm level pricing scheme that we're busy putting in place at the moment will provide an incentive for farmers to reduce their emissions on farm. And they can do that in a whole series of ways, including, as you say, by, planting crops and so on, which cropping has no methane output. It does generally has a nitrous oxide component to it, which needs to be managed as well. But also there are moves afoot to support farmers with environmental improvements on their farms as well. So, for example, that the $1.2 billion that we put into the Jobs for Nature program in last year's budget, quite a lot of that is going towards supporting farmers with environmental improvements on farm.
Another related issue that we need to talk about here is that of consumption. So as it stands, we're consuming a lot of this meat and dairy because it's so plentiful, whereas healthier foods like fruit or vegetable-based products are significantly less affordable. So in this sense, do you believe that a greater emphasis on that sort of farming could be beneficial to health as well?
I actually think that's incorrect. I mean, if you look at vegetable prices compared with meat prices, meat is actually quite expensive comparatively. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of families actually don't eat a lot of meat, you know, as part of their diet, or it's kind of reducing over time is because of the cost that's associated with it. But ultimately, again, I think what you'll see is once you've got some proper emissions pricing in the system, then, you know, the price signal will eventually flow through to consumers and into consumption. And so people will kind of get a price signal that lower emission lifestyles are cheaper than higher emission lifestyles. But up until now, New Zealand hasn't had a pricing system that enables people to see that.
What I was going for with that is that meat goes a longer way than an equivalent amount of fruit, if you get
right.
What I mean.
But we
do have significant health problems with families opting to buy unhealthy food because it's so much cheaper.
That's really the problem, is actually processed foods. If you want to get into the health debate, is that you have a significant price gap between highly processed unhealthy foods and healthier options, and unfortunately that's somewhat outside my lane.
I guess the topic that I'm raising is that changes to our farming could also serve as an opportunity to address these health problems by making fruit and vegetables and other healthy foods more affordable so that they can compete with those processed foods.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that New Zealanders do not have the healthiest diet in the world, you know, that does have a lot of attendant flow-through effects, including into really an epidemic of diabetes in this country. There are a lot of different factors that need to come into play to fix that, one of which may be emissions pricing, but, you know, a lot of which is to do with kind of public health and having an actual food strategy for the country, which we currently don't have.
Yeah, so going a bit further here, what are your thoughts on something like an introduction to a government subsidy on fruits and veggies, or even something as simple as eliminating GST on those products?
Well, we've always been reluctant to go down the path of differentiating GST because it introduces significant complexity. And I lived for a long time in the United Kingdom, which has got differential GST pricing based on, for example, whether an item of food is consumed in a restaurant or whether it's bought in a supermarket. And so you'd get these really weird situations where if you took your coffee, you know, you went to a coffee shop and you had a takeaway coffee, it would cost more than having it in store or the other way around, I can't remember. And actually didn't really change kind of consumer behavior terribly much. I think that the issue really is that people on low incomes just can't afford to make those choices. And so rather than doing it through knocking off GST or anything like that, we should focus on the fact that people aren't earning enough and focus our efforts on lifting incomes at the bottom end of the spectrum, because that's when people can start to exercise those choices.
And another significant concern that I've heard about our climate strategy is that we're simply spending too long thinking. And what I mean by that is that we keep hearing about new schemes such as the emissions reduction plan, which we talked about last week, which are geared towards preparing or planning for this change, but we're still waiting on action. I don't want to sound overly harsh, but it feels like procrastination on quite a destructive scale.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that is one of my frustrations with the governmental system in New Zealand, is that it does seem to get stuck in analysis paralysis for years at a time. And when it comes to climate change, we cannot afford that. We do have to move to action. I did say at the budget, you know, we weren't waiting for the emissions reduction plan, and there was two significant announcements in this year's budget a couple of weeks ago, one of which was the significant investment over $2 billion, about $2.3 billion that were going into projects that are definitely going to reduce our emissions, such as a heavy investment in rail, particularly moving freight off our roads and onto rail, the $300 million that's going to the Green Investment Fund to help them to scale up their investments in the green economy, another $308 million that's going to incentives for EV subsidies for electric vehicles, which will be announced in a few weeks' time, the detail of that program, bringing in tailpipe emission standards for the first time in this country, bringing in a biofuels mandate so that every litre of petrol sold has to have a biofuels component to it, which helps to reduce the emissions from those. All of that just happened in the last budget, including a commitment that every dollar that we raise through the emissions trading scheme from next year onwards will be recycled into the green economy. So it's not like we're not doing anything, and it's not like we're waiting for the emissions reduction plan to come into place before we get started. We've done a huge amount in this budget, and we have done over the course of the last 3.5 years that we've been in government. More is required, and more will always be required until we hit net zero.
So next, I would like to discuss an area of the budget that we skipped over last time but has become sort of a point of contention, and that is the police budget. What was the Green Party's response to the overall reduction in funding to the police?
Well, you have to look at the reasons why the headline number went down. So they were all actually for quite good reasons. So there was a $63 million reduction in the road safety program, which, you know, at the top end sounds like not good news, because obviously we need more and better road safety, but there's a partnership with Ministry of Transport, so that's under negotiation. There's $4.5 million reduction for investigations, but at the same time, that's being paid for by the proceeds of crime legal cost recovery, which is separate to the budget process. So, you know, whilst the Crown's commitment to that has gone down, the actual amount of revenue for investigations has gone up. And there was a $5.5 million reduction in primary response, but that's because the specialist COVID-19 funding that we put in place a year ago has come to an end because it's no longer required. And then there was one other remaining cut, but that was from a shovel-ready project from last year that was never going to be renewed. So, you know, I know the National Party are kind of jumping up and down going, oh, you've cut the funding for the police, but actually, when you look at what those line items are individually, it's completely fine.
Yeah, so National has been very critical of this change. So they've cited things like increases to gang membership and increases to assault cases. Is this a very convincing argument to you?
No, not at all. And it's just part of National's somewhat hackneyed, tough on crime kind of shtick that they pull, particularly when they're in opposition. And they don't have the responsibility of doing anything about it. None of the changes in the budgets had anything to do with the policing of gangs.
What are your thoughts on current police funding levels? Are they appropriate? Are they too high, not high enough?
I think that you could look at every single one of the public services and say that they could do with more funding. But over the course of the last 3.5 years, the government have put over 1,800 police and, you know, new cops on the beat, and significantly increased funding to ensure that. My sense is that the police are doing a pretty good job with the resources that they've got.
I lastly want to touch on this review and reclassification of stewardship land. So MP Eugenie Sage has expressed concern that the mining industry will attempt to weasel themselves into this process. Could you elaborate on those concerns for me?
Yeah, so it's sort of slightly complicated, but back in 1987, there was a lot of land that was given to the Department of Conservation, which was termed as stewardship land, and that included a lot of former state forest and crown land that's deemed to have conservation value. But there was also some dispute about whether all of the land that went into stewardship land had conservation values. And so there have been people who have been wanting the government to deliver on a promise it made, you know, 20-something years ago, to go through and to classify stewardship land, which is sort of, I think, regarded in some ways as kind of, you know, perhaps could be opened up. But the Greens' view is that by definition, stewardship land is conservation land. And our view is that the government should stick with the commitment it made at the start of its government in 2017 to no new mines on public conservation land. Having said that, we are, you know, we're quite pleased to see that there is progress on reclassifying stewardship land, because it's sort of been one of those points of contention that until the government actually does the job of reclassifying everything, at that point of contention is never going to go away.
How does the Green Party intend to stand up for this issue?
The way that we stand up for any issue will be making sure that our MPs in Parliament, particularly Eugenie Sage, because she was Conservation Minister and she's the chair of the Environment Select Committee, you know, she'll be making sure that those efforts are transparent and that there isn't undue influence on the process from, you know, companies that want to kind of use it as an opportunity to kind of inveigle their way in. And if she's not satisfied in a parliamentary sense that's going out, then, you know, we can run public campaigns on it.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.